You're listening to KBOO Portland. Stay tuned for Positively Revolting Talk Radio, coming up right after these announcements.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Oregon Peace Works, presenting the 25th annual Give Peace a Dance benefit concert and auction, Saturday, April 11th, 6 p.m. at the Grand Ballroom in downtown Salem, with music by Linda Hornbuckle, Kate Sullivan, Jenna Summer-Smith, and political satire by Dr. Atomic's Medicine Show. Appetizers and desserts included, silent and oral auctions, and bar. Tickets at 503-585-2767 or OregonPeaceWorks.org.
This is Pat McGuire. I'm the host of Boneheads and Bigots. Join us on KBOO at our new time. We're on the third Friday of every month at 11 o'clock a.m. And you know Boneheads and Bigots. We talk about politics. We talk about anti-democratic elements in politics. We talk about public affairs. We talk about books. And we always talk about music. So join us at our new time. That means in March, we're going to be on Friday, March 20th at 11 o'clock a.m.
Hi, Ed Goldberg here. Movie Talk is moving. I am the host of Movie Talk. We will be moving to Fridays at 11:30, the first and third Fridays of the month, starting on March 6th. With my colleagues DK Holm and Don Taylor, we will discuss films, big films, classic films, DVD releases, anything we can. And please follow us to Fridays at 11:30, first and third Fridays of the month for Movie Talk.
But it's lined with the things you don't show. Lay me beside you, down on the floor. I've been your lover from the womb to the tomb. I dress as your daughter when the moon becomes round. You'll be my mother when everything's gone.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. It's the vernal equinox, the beginning of spring at long last. Winter has faded away in beautiful Cascadia, and we have liquid sunshine greeting the first day of spring out there.
Indeed we do.
As it should be, as it always is in our beautiful and green land. So, welcome, my friends, to Positively Revolting Talk Radio. And that was one of my favorite songs that we played by Chrissy Hynde and the Pretenders called Hymn to Her.
Oh, mine as well. And I'm glad you found it for this morning.
So the witches are in this morning. Excuse me. As I said, it's the vernal equinox. And although I have read that it's a myth that eggs are easier to balance on this day, I personally believe that they are easier to balance. So go balance an egg. It's really fun. And celebrate the day. And we have a very special guest with us on the phone this morning to help us celebrate the vernal equinox and to talk about the changing times and how we can roll with them and be whole and sane. And so I'd like to welcome Lisa Dale Miller to the show. Hello, Lisa.
Hi, ladies.
Hi there. Welcome.
It's such a privilege to have you with us. Lisa Dale Miller is an artist and psychotherapist and astrologer and tarot reader and teacher. And she has a presence on the web at astrowisdom.com. And I know my lovely co-host, Crystal, has been an admirer of hers for some time and introduced me to her. I'm Melody Silverwolf, of course. And so we're very happy to have you, Lisa. So tell us a little bit about your take on the world as an artist and a person who seeks to develop your whole self and live as a whole person.
And Lisa, before you begin, I just want to say that I love the way you put all these different aspects together in your monthly moon messages, and I like the synthesis of what you do, so I'm so glad you're here today.
Oh, that's so wonderful to hear, because it's really been my intention my whole life, truly my whole life, to be able to, in whatever form I put my energy, to allow people to know that it is possible, no matter what you're doing in your life, to really deeply connect, not only with your own sense of wholeness, but with that sense of really knowing that wholeness is something that we all share at our most intimate, most basic level. And that wholeness really, there's no barrier to the intention to live your life from this place. And I could just tell that the two of you participate not only through intention but action.
Oh, yes.
Indeed. Well, as I said, Crystal is a recently retired therapist, and I am basically a professional activist.
Mm-hmm.
And I also am a priestess, and I occasionally teach, have done much more of it in the past, but right now my focus is a little bit more on, shall we say, mundane politics, but I strive to have a deep spiritual life as well. And I guess that's sort of what we were hoping that we could talk about with you this morning with our callers is, you know, it's a difficult time to people for people to be living in. And many people are, as you know, like the title of the Michael Douglas movie, falling down. They just are falling apart.
You know, what I want to say is that every moment is an invitation. And difficulty is an invitation to actually sift through the story that our minds create all the time about what's going on, to allow us to really experience things as they are. And you know, the amazing thing about what's happening for the entire world is that we have an opportunity to psychically, emotionally, mentally, and physically viscerally experience uncertainty. This is the way things always are. Physics tells us this. Almost every one of the deep spiritual traditions that have any aspects in the mystical connection with the things, the way things truly are, know that all things arise and pass away in each moment.
And so basically it sounds like you're saying that it's a question of embracing something that we've been taught to fear in our culture.
And not just fear. The thing is, what people really need to understand is that this is not just cultural, because the mind, the brain, is actually organized to create an illusion of continuance moment to moment, even though that's not how things actually are.
So I see what you're saying.
We seek security because we are evolutionarily, biologically geared to experience security in our lives. Otherwise, we wouldn't procreate.
Well, I think our DNA has something to say about that.
I know that sounds basic, but truly, this is an instinct in us to really have that sense that things continue, that we continue, that when we go to sleep, we're going to wake up, that all things remain the same, and yet they do not. Now, this said, this allows us to real deep looking, and we all have the opportunity to look deeply at our experience in every moment, especially when difficult experience arises. This is an invitation. Wow, this is painful. Okay, let me really drop in and see what this is really about for me. How am I behaving in my life? What am I cultivating in my mind, in my heart, in my actions that might be contributing to this pain? Or is this just the basic pain that shows up in life? And the beauty of all these tools, whether we are talking about astrology, whether we're talking about any of the tools for self-knowledge, whether we're talking about tools that I use with my patients in psychotherapy, mindfulness, meditation practices. All these tools are to help us develop self-awareness and to really be able to bring the intention for cultivating knowledge, awareness, compassion, kindness, and actions that really support ourselves and other people. And you know, I don't know about you guys, but I got to tell you, you know, I've been, AstroWisdom.com has been around since 1999. And I cannot tell you how over the years I get emails from people continually saying to me, why do you talk about politics? Why do you do this? Mm-hmm. Why can't you just talk about astrology? Astrology has nothing to do with it. And what I say to them is that what they don't understand is that the history of astrology, whether it's Western, whether it's Vedic, it started with people looking in the sky and trying to gain meaning, trying to understand, mm-hmm. and trying to get a sense of the rhythms, what happens in the human mind and body. And they noticed that the heavens were cyclical. The same things arose over and over and over again, and they also noticed that at those times, strange things happened in their communities. And astrology was used from the get-go, long before there was ever personal natal astrology, to help leaders chart the nation's goals. So it's intimate, and anyone who says to you, spirituality, politics, they don't go together, I say no. And I do think we actually have a president now.
Who understands that?
Who not only understands it, but walks the walk.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. The first thing I did this morning, because I don't have TV, I haven't for years, but of course, thanks to the internet, you know, we can all be able to see things. I actually sat down this morning and watched President Obama talk to Jay Leno last night.
It was a good interview.
It was amazing. And what I liked about it so much was he's so real. That's the thing. He's really modeling realness. Be who you are. Do what you say you're going to do. And try to show up with a kind of integrity that lets people know you're not perfect, but you're doing your best. And really, that's all we can expect from each other in these difficult times.
I think
show up
true.
And do your best.
Well, what would you say to people who, I mean, we, you know, those of us who are aware of these issues and are, you know, have confronted some of our innermost issues are perhaps, I don't know, maybe we're more willing to take risks, but I know many people who are mired in their troubles, and they don't think that they can help themselves. They think that, oh, only winning the lottery would help me, or, you know, I don't have any special powers or ability to look at myself. I just look at myself and think, oh, I'm broke, I better get busy working. How do you help people see that they have the power to shape their lives, and how do they break out of that mindset where they're stuck?
Well, the first thing is awareness of the mindset. A lot of people really don't know that these are thoughts that they are generating that are not an accurate reflection of what's really going on outside of them.
That's such a good point. I'm so glad to hear you say that.
So that's the first piece, is awareness.
I think a lot of people get caught up in, they're easily affected by other people's moods or energy, and they get caught in this negativity loop that they don't even realize they're doing it.
You know, the beautiful thing is, it doesn't matter what tradition, and you both, as I assume Crystal's been obviously reading my work for a long time.
I have. I've really enjoyed it, and it's informed my work, too.
So you know that I walk in many worlds and have walked in many worlds. And so I know that when Starhawk talks about the ability to use in the intention of ritual
mm-hmm.
to change one's consciousness, what mm-hmm. she's actually asking us to do, she is saying, through awareness alone, you
yes.
have the capacity to see how things truly are.
Yes.
And with that seeing, that clear seeing, this is what the Buddha called it, Sampajana, clear seeing. With that clear seeing, you can then set a course for steps you might be able to take in actuality to cultivate resources that you might not know about.
Yes.
But I can tell you, when people are in pain, they think there's no help.
Mm-hmm. And
it's very difficult to look outside for that when you're in pain.
I have seen, I had the great privilege of studying with Starhawk for many years, and when I do ritual with people, I mean, I see that they just they don't expect anything, and yet they gain so much from it. And I think that people are afraid of that word. People who are haven't really had much contact with the realm of spirituality, or perhaps mm-hmm. they rejected religion as a child. Mm-hmm. Ritual is like a scary word to them, and I think that
yeah.
I do my best when I, you know, work with people to make that not a frightening prospect. But
well, I think ritual has the inherent meaning of somebody doing something to you, as opposed to you as the
sort
ritual.
Of yes.
Yeah.
You picture the volcano and someone being thrown into it. Well, you know, I wanted to say that this is, of course, a call-in show, and we welcome the calls, questions, comments of our listeners who are make the show what it is. And if you have questions, comments, et cetera, for our guest, Lisa Dale Miller, who, of course, is a therapist, astrologer, tarot reader, and all-around fabulous goddess, give us a call at 503-231-8187. We're here today on the spring equinox and talking about tools for maintaining one's sanity and finding wisdom in this crazy world we're living in.
You know, I would just like to say something about the equinox. I ran the chart for the equinox this
morning.
Oh, thank
you.
And I want to remind everyone that this is the day when we are asked to consider balance
mm-hmm.
as a path for rebirth. That's really the theme of the day. And today at 4:44 this morning, the sun went into Aries. Now, of course,
4:44, that's
yeah,
excellent.
And obviously, this is based on Western astrology, and everybody knows that Western astrology is not reflective of the actual, what's
yes.
actually going on up there anymore
mm-hmm.
because of the precession of the
mm-hmm.
equinoxes. So I'll just throw that caveat out. However, it does somehow still work. I don't really know why. Being a scientifically minded person, I can actually rest in the mystery of I have no idea why Western astrology still works.
We had that discussion just this morning, Crystal and I.
Yeah.
And I read something recently on the internet that I thought was from some forum, and it was a good explanation of why it works
well,
for the skeptical.
the thing is, all I can say is that it is part of the Western psyche.
Yes,
that's
and because it's
true.
Part of the Western psyche, it works at that level. What I meant was scientifically, I
yes,
have no idea
yes,
why it works.
Yes, yes.
However,
well, the science just hasn't been discovered yet is the way that I look at it. We can't mm-hmm. measure them yet, but who knows?
Exactly.
I
and
agree.
I also think it has something to do with the fact that we participate in a group set of knowledge in the West, and Western astrology is part of it. So somehow it still works for us. In any event, what I wanted to say was that Aries is the sign of new beginnings. So today is that day when the sun, which represents our essential motivation for being here, is just resonating around this sense of beginning anew. And Venus actually is retrograde right now in Aries. And when planets have that retrograde motion, what they're asking us to do is to take the impulse of the energy and turn it inward. And, of course, Venus rules love, connection, relationship. So really, today is a day for all of us to pay attention to our relationship with ourselves.
To love ourselves. Well, we do have a caller. So let's hear from Ruth Ann. Ruth Ann, you're on the air.
Good morning from an Aries.
Welcome.
I would like to recommend the book called Narrative Medicine by Dr. Lewis Mel Madrona. It's a hyphenated word. He's a medical doctor raised by his Cherokee grandparents. And he's worked with marginal populations like teens who were doing drugs, and unfortunately he's moved to Canada but in the last couple of years. But it's a powerful story how healing happens within a family and a community before it can really happen. And he talks about being involved in ritual. And I find my own experience that some of my friends that have more medical science backgrounds call ritual, you know, woo-woo stuff, and
And we need to laugh about that and let it go. And sometimes I would tell my students, it's okay to practice a line. If somebody's caught you off guard and you're shocked by their maybe nastiness, just to step back and say, you know, there's no need to hassle another human being. Just, but know your boundaries. Thanks for the show.
Well, thanks for your call.
Yeah, that was a beautiful insight. And I actually want to put a little good word in for all of my fabulous science friends. I have to say that these days, science is a whole lot more weird than spirituality could ever be.
Isn't that the truth? If you read much about quantum physics.
It's just, that's all of science. You know, they've gone way beyond us. And I do actually think that ritual, if you substitute the word intention for the word ritual, you can strip it of mm-hmm. any of these negative connotations mm-hmm. that anyone might have.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Using affirmations is a good way, I've found, to introduce people to the concept.
That's another great way. But the thing is, what all ritual is, literally all it is setting intention in a way that has meaning for you, which is one of the reasons why I'm a big proponent of people really creating their own ritual.
Mm-hmm.
And not necessarily saying, well, there's this long tradition and blah, blah, blah. Well, there may be a long tradition and there may be something very powerful to learn from studying a tradition. But when it comes to doing ritual on your own, you are the one who knows yourself best.
Yes.
So trust, drop in, trust, and create your own thing.
You know, I've just got to share with you that when I drive over here to Cabo, I have to cross the Columbia from Washington to Oregon, and it's a lot of traffic this time of morning. And I do believe that ritual has to be fresh. But so I try very much to be totally in my body when I start the car, and my intention is that we may all travel in safety. And it makes me feel great, and mm-hmm. so far so good.
You know, this is actually a stress reduction technique that I teach my patients. Because down here in Silicon Valley, let me tell you, traffic is one of the things that gives people the most stress.
That's one of the reasons we don't live there.
Yeah, that's right. Come here
well,
with us.
I was in Portland last summer, and I have to say, I haven't seen traffic like that in a long time.
It can be ugly.
Yeah. It can be ugly. But in any event, what I do is I teach them metta practice, loving kindness practice, so that when someone cuts them off, they, instead of having that car, oh, what a jerk, da-da-da, they actually wish them safety. They wish them a safe journey. They wish them health and well-being. And it really helps them.
Mm-hmm.
And it also helps the person.
Oh, it's so hard to do, but
I know. I found that smiling and waving or blowing the person a kiss makes them even more upset. Often they look at you like, why is she doing that? But it makes you feel good. And it's like, well, I was trying to be nice. If you don't like it, I can't force you to accept it. It's a fun thing. Well, you know, I did want to ask you also, we have another caller, so I'll hold that question, but we'll get back to that after we talk to Joanne. So, Joanne, you're on the air.
Hello?
You're on the air.
Oh, okay. Yes, ma'am, did you say Silicon Valley? Is that, I used to live in California. Is that like San Jose? And
mm-hmm.
I can't think of that other little town, city that I lived in. Is that what you're talking about?
It sure is.
Okay, unfortunately, my daughter was born there, and we didn't live long. But anyway, something's been on my mind off and on for some time, and something tells me you better not ask it, because when you say you got some friends that are scientists, so, but anyway, I'll just go ahead, what the hell. It's on my mind off and on. I've been sensing that the government or scientists or like people are fooling around, doing things in the sky or the air, whatever you want to call it, and like to control our moods or to control the weather. I'll just listen to what anyone has to say, because I've just been curious about it. Anyway, thank you.
Thanks a lot. I think she's referring to what people call chemtrails.
And so I'm not sure I have any comment about that because I've never heard anything about chemtrails, nor have I heard anything about the government trying to control the weather. Although I can tell you, if they could control the weather, we wouldn't be having such weird weather.
This is leftover from the Bush administration.
Yeah, I think that, you know, I do believe that there has been some experimentation going on like that, but it remains to be seen whether or not it's related to, you know, the phenomenon she's talking about.
One thing that I would like to say is that if there is an effort to have an impact on climate change in that way, I'm sure that what science is doing is it's doing it in the interests of helping our planet to survive. I really don't think anymore that having the idea that somehow science is against humanity holds much water.
Well, I think that it all depends, like any piece of knowledge, what you do with it.
That's true, except that science and technology, we have so many organizations now of scientists who are interested in human issues and who donate so much of their energy and time to bettering our world, to using their technology, using their brains, using their talent to making life better for people. And so I am always very suspicious at this point when people point their finger at technology and science and say, well, somehow this is something that's against our better interests.
Well, I think that's a good point. Well, you know, what I wanted to ask you about was, as a woman of a certain age, and I've been struggling with lots of issues that are arising in the world around us, I've been working a lot with the concept for myself of the words of the Buddha, where supposedly the Buddha said that desire is the root of all suffering.
And I wanted to say that.
Well, that's what it's attributed to the Buddha. But what
no,
do
the
you
Buddha
think?
Buddha never said anything like that. As a matter of fact, the Buddha didn't have a problem with desire.
So that you reject that out of hand then.
He never said that life is all suffering either.
No, I don't believe that was attributed to the Buddha. But I just wondered if you think that desiring and suffering are linked, and how do you deal with that?
So suffering is linked through craving and clinging. Desire in and of itself is not the problem. The problem is that, for the most part, what the human mind is organized to do is to increase pleasure and to try to avoid pain. And so what this does is it manifests suffering for us, even pleasure manifests suffering for us, when we cling to the idea that the continuance of pleasure is something that will create happiness for us, and that our happiness is dependent upon all things being just right and being okay. And of course, life doesn't show up this way. And so that's one form of suffering, when we cling to the idea that in order for us to have equanimity, that all things must be perfect, everything must be good. It's never like that. So we suffer when we cling to that idea, and we crave only good all the time. And
it's a perfect day to talk about that, I guess, since it's a time of balance.
We also experience suffering when we are averse to pain, when we cannot be in the presence of pain in a way that allows us to be with the reality of it. So what we do is we often increase our pain because we want it to go away so much. And that actually creates suffering around pain. Pain and suffering are two different things. So we cling to the idea that all pain is something that has to go away. If we didn't experience pain, nothing would ever get better.
Yes. Well, on that note, we've got a couple callers waiting.
Okay.
So let's go ahead and talk to Amy. Amy, you're on the air.
Hi, is that me?
That's you.
Hi. I just wanted to say a couple of things. First off, I was going to say that, you know, at some point in the past, science and spirituality didn't have definite delineations between the two, and that was just kind of like a general quest for knowledge and a quest for the unknown. And so somehow, you know, if we could pull away from that dualistic, you know, mind frame, having to have everything separated, and just, you know, then there would be less of an argument between, okay, what's better, spirituality or science, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing I just wanted to recommend Lynn McTaggart's material. Do you guys know who she is?
I don't know.
She she's I guess an investigative kind of journalist kind of a person, and I was introduced to her through the Down the Rabbit Hole, What the Bleep Do We Know?
Oh yeah.
Quantum physics and spirituality. And I actually have gotten a couple of her audio books that I put on while I'm working, and it's just brilliant. It's amazing. You know, and I'm into kind of a lot of this, you know, stuff that ranges from science to spirituality, but she's really cool because it's all about, you know, the intent. Her books are called The Intention Experiment. Her website. She's got a website called The Intention Experiment, and like her books are Living with Intention, and basically it's, you know, pulling the science side of all of that together, where, you know, it talks about, you know, she uses a lot of examples from, you know, Buddhist cultures and, you know, scientific studies that kind of just put together how our intention really does work to affect.
Would you say
everything.
Her name again, listener?
Lynn McTaggart?
Yes, Lynn McTaggart.
And we've got her website is Intention Experiment.
The Intention Experiment. And they're doing like, she's doing like a little mini Gaia experiment where they do, you know, where they try to do like, she gathers people from the from her website to, you know, focus their intention on different projects, and they do distance healing. She does distance healing through the website and other stuff like that. Really, really amazing stuff. Amazing woman doing some amazing work.
All right.
And I just thought that that seemed relevant, and I would let you guys know.
Well, thank you for that.
Okay, thank you.
Have a lovely vernal equinox.
Yes, definitely. Happy Ostara.
All right. And we do have another caller, so let's go ahead and talk to Jeff. Jeff, you're on the air.
Good morning and happy spring.
Thank you.
Boing.
I'm so thrilled that the sun's coming back, even though I know it's just the tilt of the earth, but the phenomenon is always puts more sun in my eyes, which puts more spring in my step. I don't
a
know.
Song
thanks
in your
so
heart.
Much. Thanks so much for discussing what you're discussing. I thought, Melody, there for a moment. I've heard it before, to desire and the source of suffering and so forth, but thanks for kind of clearing up. It seems more that attachment is this source of suffering. Now, and I wanted to also discuss two other things very quickly. Ritual, which is a great word, comes from rite, R-I-T-U-S, ritus in the Latin. And usually it is associated with religion, but ritual and habit, habitual, these two terms come together with me because for me, for instance, when I'm a smoker, and I literally roll each one of my cigarettes, and it becomes ritualistic and on top of it, habitual. And I'm troubled that the ritual and habit can kind of go hand in hand, because then it could lead again to attachment. And one final thought, that is, and I hate to contest your guest because I think she's right on, but here's the startling truth about scientists and a bunch called the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, DARPA, and that group under the Pentagon is holding contests, encouraging young people, blah, 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 and taking science and aiming it right towards nothing but armament, militarism, so-called defense, and acts and tools and implements of war and destruction and disease and all of that. So
actually, I want to respond to both of your points. The first one about ritual and habit.
Yes.
Here's a piece of advice for you, which you can take or not take. I love the fact that you have the awareness that these two things have a relationship. So what you can do is you can add mindfulness to the ritual of rolling up a cigarette, and you can mindfully ask yourself, am I smoking because of an addiction to this? And if there's any quality of that, should I open my awareness now to how my body actually feels when I take a drag on this cigarette? Should I fully actually experience what is happening for me? How my body is actually responding to this smoke? And by bringing mindfulness in, you might learn something about the relationship you're having with your body when you put a substance like tobacco into it. And that might actually change your intention around whether or not this is a particular ritual you want to continue. You'll end up deciding whatever you decide. But this is one way to break habit, by actually bringing mindful awareness to something that could be habitual rather than ritual. Does that make sense?
When it's habit, it's mindlessness, isn't it?
Exactly. And mindlessness only shows up because we are avoiding something. We are using mindfulness as a way to avoid.
And so I think it goes right along with what you were saying before about this being the time for self-love, that mindfulness and self-love, of course, go hand in hand.
Now, of course, it's not for me to say whether or not in the end you'll decide that smoking is an act of self-love for you. Who knows? But you may
well,
be
thank
able
you.
To
thank
make...
you. I'll listen for your other comments, and thanks for taking my call.
Okay. Now, in terms of DARPA, obviously, there's... All scientists make the decision as to whether or not they want to work on military projects. I've known many scientists intimately in my life, and I've known many of them who have made a conscious choice to never work on military technology or military projects. But I also want to say that though I am not a big proponent of weapons, trust me, nor am I a big proponent of putting my tax money into weapons, the fact is a lot of the terrific technology that we do have that is helping people has actually been funded in its early stages by various arms of the military because it was a technology that they thought they might want to use. And so it's a double-edged sword. Mm-hmm. There's good points to this and there's very bad points to this. And so I appreciate that gentleman's comments terrifically, and I don't feel contradicted in any way, shape, or form.
Well, and I hope that all the things that, you know, this conversation along with millions of others, and all the things that are happening in our world today, will lead us to a place where we can do scientific research for the sake of the knowledge for good, and you know,
absolutely.
Leave the need for weaponry behind.
I agree.
So I did want to say, before we go on, I want to make a quick announcement about what's coming up, because it's almost 8:45. We'll be here for about another 15 minutes, and then it will be time for Northwest Vets for Peace at 9 o'clock. They'll be hosting Veterans Voice, with a focus on the issues of women veterans. At 10 o'clock, news headlines and commentary on Air Cascadia with Chris Andre and Liam Delta. 10:15, you'll hear flashpoints. You'll hear a speak out of youth against the war and a Palestinian legislator and democracy activist comments on Israel's new right-wing foreign minister. 11 o'clock, we'll hear Boneheads and Bigots with Pat McGuire. 11:30, hear reviews of the latest movies on Movie Talk. All that is coming up, so don't go away. We're currently talking with Lisa Dale Miller, and today is the Vernal Equinox. That's what we're discussing, that and her work as a therapist and astrologer and tarot reader, among other things. Our number here is 503-231-8187, and let's talk to LJ, who's our next caller. You're on the air.
Well, good morning. How are you guys?
We're lovely. How are you?
Thank you so much for the show. Okay, just a couple of really quick things. I have just finished taking a course on Purana healing and meditation. And my instructor says that if you just meditate for 30 seconds before you get behind the wheel of your automobile, it will help to clear your mind, and if you find yourself in a traffic situation, instead of flipping people off, you will send them a message of love.
I think that's good advice.
Yeah, can't argue with that.
Okay. And as you know, prana healing involves the use of crystals and in like healing your body. And we did a lot of exercises about clearing out your chakras, your heart chakra, your head chakra. And our last class was devoted to something called super brain yoga, which is absolutely fascinating, you guys. You can go to your computer. It's called superbrainyoga.com. It's been used very successfully in patients with Alzheimer's disease and with autistic children. And it's a very, very simple exercise about the acupuncture points on your ears to grab your earlobes left to right first and then right to left, and doing squats about anywhere from 14 to 21 squats. Facing east is the most powerful effect. Facing north will give you a little less effectiveness.
Sounds like you've really gotten a lot out of this, LJ. What did you say it was called again?
Super Brain Yoga.
Okay, well, great. Thanks for sharing that. We do need to move on.
Can I just say one more thing?
Sure.
About the chemtrails, I have a website. It's called aboutthesky.com.
Yes. Okay.
And it will give you all of the information that you need to know about chemtrails.
All right. Well,
okay,
then hopefully that will be helpful.
Thanks
for calling.
And we have another caller waiting, I think.
Goodness me. They're coming fast and furious this morning. Let's talk to Stefan. You're on the air.
Hi. Good morning.
Good morning.
I have one question and then a comment. The first thing I wanted to ask Lisa is if she could recommend, I love what you were saying about the separation between craving and suffering and contemplating that and understanding that is something I would really like to do more. Can you recommend some resources for more of the wisdom on that topic? Yours was great, but it was so quick. I know I need to hear it more.
Absolutely. A terrific new book has just come out by Philip Moffitt.
Okay.
M-O-F-F-I-T-T. He is one of our premier Vipassana teachers. And the book is called Dancing with Life. And
okay. It
is an absolutely clear distillation of the Four Noble Truths, which really is the basis of what I just talked about. So.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
I'm personally involved in 12-step recovery stuff. And,
good for you. Well, you know, I work a lot with substance abuse.
It's come to me that it is through practice that we change. You know, we get what we practice doing.
Yeah.
You know, and so for me, it's practicing different ways, and that's how we build up a change. Anyway, the thing I wanted to say about technology, I work with technology all the time, and it's come to me finally that technology is the product of us. We are organic beings. We are organic emanations of the planet. And so, therefore, technology is absolutely natural. Technology is like the fruit from us as the trees, if you will. It's not really a separable thing. Even to the fact that we use things like metallurgy to build hard things, which seems so antithetical to, trees and the natural world. In fact, it is all completely natural. There is nothing that is not natural, and it's all a mental separation that we have about technology.
I agree.
And then the other point, the previous caller was talking about DARPA, and that is absolutely evil. There is positive and negative spin on everything in the world, and there are absolutely negative spins coming out of some of the greatest spiritual traditions. My personal feeling is, the wonderful, beautiful teachings of Christ have been twisted radically by human ego and turned into completely destructive forces in many cases. But that doesn't mean that the teachings weren't beautiful and true. It's the choice to go positive or negative with the impetus, So technology can be fantastic, as you said, and it can be negative, and it's also not anything really separate from us.
I think that your comments really reflect so much the teachings of the Buddha, because what
you're doing is what I try so hard to do, which is to take the middle way. You know, there actually is a way to include everything and to use the gift of our intelligence to clearly see things and not get caught up in all kinds of ideas and theories and all kinds of things that will create a lot of distress.
Yeah,
and yet, with clear seeing, we are actually able to make change in things that are radically destructive for us, that have been human-made or otherwise.
To try and ignore our intellect is to put down very valuable tools to be effective.
You know, what I love so much about doing shows like this is that to model for people who are so deeply connected to the spiritual aspects of life, to model for them that there's nothing we need to deny about our beautiful human mind.
Yeah. I sat one day with a Buddhist who helped me understand and really showed me that one of the important things he had gotten from his Buddhist experience was that there was a dedication within that tradition to not denying these things, and that it's absolutely reconcilable. And that was a number of years ago, and it's really helped form my path forward, which is still growing.
Well,
thank you very much.
Hear that.
I want to thank you so much for calling and sharing all that with us.
Yeah,
it's my pleasure. I really appreciate that you guys were on and I found you this morning. Thanks a lot.
Excellent. Have a good day.
Okay, bye guys.
Okay, so Lisa, I want to ask you a little bit about, we haven't really touched on Tarot yet. I know that you read Tarot and you teach Tarot.
Yeah.
For somebody who's thought, you know, maybe I'd like to get a Tarot deck and try out this Tarot. I don't know anything about it.
Right.
I have my deck and now what do I do? What would you recommend they do?
This is what I recommend. For beginners, I recommend the Rider-Waite deck. This is the deck I teach on. The reason I teach on this deck is because Pamela Coleman Smith had the beautiful, brilliant ability to instill in the images themselves the meanings of the cards. So, and the best way to learn how to do the Tarot is to have a relationship with the images themselves.
Mm-hmm.
The way that I come at the Tarot is the following. In any given moment, when you are working with the Tarot, you are seeing a external representation of your psyche. That's
mm-hmm.
what comes out. Okay? It's not some codified truth. And it is nothing separate from what is available to you through your own psyche in that moment. Therefore, the Tarot is an unbelievable tool for direct insight into your own knowledge. I am a firm believer in the fact that there isn't anything, any Tarot reader or any astrologer can tell you that you don't already know at some level. They may have the ability to see things that you're not willing to know in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
Can I ask a personal question here? Would
mm-hmm.
that be okay? Well, I use a Mother Peace Tarot deck myself that Vicki Noble has done, and I really like it, and I feel connected to it.
Yes.
And so every Samhain, I draw a card for myself, and this past one I got the Devil, which is in her deck. It's a pyramid with people being either abused or abuser on these different levels, and I'm having a hard time connecting with
yeah.
it. And
I'm not really in sync with the image that she uses, although I have to say I love the Mother Peace deck.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, once you've gained some intimacy with the images themselves, go use any deck you feel like using. It really doesn't matter.
Yeah, I learned on
However,
on the deck.
Let me say about the Devil card
yes.
in general. The Devil card actually is about the things that chain us mentally, physically,
mm-hmm.
and emotionally.
Yes.
Temptations.
Just the things that imprison us. That
mm-hmm.
is what it is about. That's why you'll notice in the Rider-Waite deck, in that traditional image, is the Lover's card, except it's no longer the angel between them. There's
mm-hmm.
the devil angel between them, and the two people are tied. And the Lover's card represents that moment when we decide
we want to make our choices based on what is appropriate for us. Mm. We have a sense of self-awareness enough that we can choose what is right for us and not necessarily follow something that might not feel right internally. So what happens is sometimes we make choices that in the end imprison us. Maybe because we didn't have the ability to see clearly what we were choosing. So when the devil comes up on Samhain, Samhain, of course, is that moment where the veil is thin between the worlds.
Yes.
Right? We have access to knowledge we wouldn't normally have access to because we have all these wonderful partners there helping us on. And it is the new year. So when the devil shows up, it's saying to you, this is a year when your attention should be placed firmly on the things that imprison you, that chain you internally and externally, and to make decisions about whether or not you actually want to be held in that way, whether or not freedom, liberation of your mind, of your heart, of your spirit, whether that is something you'd like to put a lot of attention into cultivating this year.
See, that is
the way I would interpret it.
I think that's a great interpretation.
I do too. Thank you so much, Lisa.
And of course, that is the way we use the tarot in a depth psychological way, which is the way I use tarot and astrology. And I know that this is not necessarily the way most people think of it, but these tools are direct access to your own self-knowledge. And that is my whole goal when I work with people.
Well, you know,
they are tools.
I think that that's a sensible way to look at it. It's not some invisible deity that's speaking to you through cards. It's all about relating to your own reality, I think. I did want to be sure to mention again your website, which is astrowisdom.com. And
I also want to mention my blog.
Oh, yes.
It's actually connected to my... I have a whole other website for my psychology practice.
Mm-hmm.
But my blog is called Mindful Psyche. And you can just Google Mindful Psyche. Or actually, if you go to astrowisdom.com, there's a button there on the homepage. You can get there through that. And that's a place where I really drop into this whole idea of Buddhist psychology, which is what I do. It's the basis of my practice with my patients, mindfulness-based therapies and Buddhist psychology. So
we have mindfulpsyche.com and astrowisdom.com for the two faces of what you do.
It's not mindfulpsyche.com. It's on Blogspot.
Oh,
but
okay.
If you just go to AstroWisdom, you'll see the button for it, and you can get there. And I unfortunately have a session that I have to do in about 4 minutes, but I really, really... First of all, I want to thank the two of you for inviting me. What a joy.
It was a joy to have you.
A mutual joy, believe us.
I also want to say how profoundly impressed I am with the insights that your callers have called up with today.
Well, I
truly do want to wish everyone a new beginning on this beautiful equinox.
Thank you so much. You know, I've been doing this show for 15 years and for a while with a different host, but I think our listeners, we have the most amazing audience in the world. They're very wise and informed and committed. I love them.
We love our listeners.
Thank you so much, Lisa Dale Miller, and I hope you have a wonderful day, and I hope we can have you on again.
Many blessings to all of you.
Same to you.
Bye-bye.
Farewell. So, unfortunately, we're almost out of time. So that is Lisa Dale Miller had to run off to real life to actually help one of her clients in person. I did want to talk just another moment about tarot, since we didn't really get to finish that answer. I think if there is anyone out there who I agree with her that the Rider-Waite deck is a great deck to learn on. But there was a book that I did want to mention that she did not get to mention. I know she admires the work of Mary Greer a great deal. Mary is actually an Oregonian. So you might want to look up her. She has a very excellent book called Tarot for Yourself, which is a very good way to working with tarot without a teacher or taking a class. So, and for those of you who want to go balance an egg, as I said, go try that. Today is the equinox, and whether it's scientifically true or not, it's fun to balance an egg on the equinox.
It
And I hope that we have a great spring. I have great hopes for our community and our nation and our world in the coming weeks and months and years, that we can pull off this transformation and make this world a place that we want to live in. And so we'll be back in 2 weeks. In the meantime, go out there, enjoy yourself, transform the world, and of course you know what to do. Keep on being positively revolting.
It's time for us to be, yes, positively revolting.
I've heard it's lined with the things you don't show. Lay me beside you, down on the floor. I've been your lover from the womb to the tomb. I dress as your daughter when the moon becomes round.
To the people.
On Friday, March 20th, 6 to 7 p.m., Bread and Roses reflects on an incredible but true story of rebellion. Tired of government propaganda, thousands of women occupied a major TV station and began broadcasting their own programs. Angered by cuts to education, tens of thousands took to the streets to protect and support striking teachers. On Friday, March 20th, Bread and Roses reflects on this true story of a teacher's rebellion in Mexico. We'll hear from the women who took over the TV station and perspectives from a renowned filmmaker who has documented people's protests around the world, featuring music by Oaxaca native Lila Downs. That's Teacher's Rebellion, Friday, March 20th, 6 to 7 p.m.
Good morning. It's 9 o'clock. You're tuned to KBOO Portland, and it's the right radio zine for Friday. Coming right up on KBOO, it's the Northwest Vets for Peace. They're hosting Veterans Voice with a focus on the issues of women veterans. At 10 o'clock, it's news headlines and commentary on Air Cascadia with Chris Andre and Liam Delta. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, hear a speak out of youth against the war and a Palestinian legislator, whose name is Mustafa Barghouti, speaking about the appointment of Avigdor Lieberman as Israel's foreign minister. At 11 o'clock, it's Boneheads and Bigots with Pat McGuire. And at 11:30, hear reviews of the latest movies on Movie Talk. Coming right up, it's Northwest Vets for Peace with Veterans Voice.
He's 5 foot 2 and he's 6 feet 4. He fights with missiles and with spears. He's all of 31 and he's only 17. He's been a soldier for 1,000 years. He's a Catholic, a Hindu, an atheist, a Jain, a Buddhist and a Baptist and a Jew. And he knows he shouldn't kill, and he knows he always will kill you for me, my friend, and me for you. And he's fighting for Canada, he's fighting for France, he's fighting for the USA. And he's fighting for the Russians, and he's fighting for Japan, and he thinks we'll put an end to war this way. And he's fighting for democracy, he's fighting for the Reds, he says it's for the peace of all. He's the one who must decide who's to live and who's to die, and he never sees the writing on the wall. But without him, how would Hitler have condemned him at Laval? Without him, Caesar would have stood alone. He's the one who gives his body as a weapon of the war, and without him, all this killing can't go on. He's a universal soldier, and he really is to blame. His orders come from far away no more. They come from here and there, and you and me. And brothers, can't you see? This is not the way we put the end to war.
Oh, no. Well, maybe
Veterans Voice is on the air. We're glad to be here. I've been away for a little while, but I'm glad to be back and feeling a lot better. And this is Veterans Voice on KBOO Portland, and sponsored by Northwest Veterans for Peace and all you good listeners out there. We just appreciate that you're here and have made the change to Friday with us. And in case you have some other people that don't know that we're on Fridays now, you want to make sure that they know about it, because we look forward to you being here. And Bill is here today. We're glad to have Bill with us.
Yes, old Bill's here today, and glad to see you back again, John.
Thank you very much. And Marvin's got a great program lined up today. We have a great guest and interview, and as soon as we have her online, we'll get going. Marvin, do you want to give any little introduction to her, or our topic, or we're waiting till the phone?
Okay, I think she got her. We're going to talk to Nancy Sloan. She's a nurse practitioner up on the Hill, and we're going to talk about female veterans' health issues and about what they're doing up there. Yesterday, I went up for get together for women veterans, and ran into Carol Randall up there, a friend of ours.
God love her. Yeah. How's she doing?
She's doing great.
Good.
She's great.
Uh-huh.
She's a Air Force medic stationed in Japan during the Vietnam War, and there was quite a few folks up there. I wish there would have been more. There was a couple women there that were probably in their 70s that were there.
WW2 or
yeah, probably or Korea,
yeah,
maybe. And they were there, and it was good. They had all kinds of refreshments and stuff. It was really nice, and the information they give out was really good. And the stuff they're going to be doing up there for women veterans is going to be amazing. The stuff they're talking about, and they're in the planning stages right now, and some of it's going already, and it's gonna really be good for women veterans, and I'm really glad to see that. And Carol asked some good questions, and
they got kind of short shrift for a long time.
Yeah, they did.
The women veterans,
they sure did, and they talked about that yesterday too, about women not getting their fair share
fair treatment.
And they're really going about it good. And as I was checking in to go in, Nancy, you were leaving.
Oh, is that right? Sorry.
That's all right. So we didn't get a talk, but it was really a good program yesterday. And the things that they talked about was really good. And I want to talk to you a little bit today about the programs and the things that are going on. And first I want to talk about what's going on tomorrow out at the Vet Center. Could you give a kind of a background on what you're doing and where it's located and everything?
Right. On the 31st at the Vet Center, we'll be holding our third focus group, which is designed to assess what gaps and what challenges women veterans perceive in trying to access the VA for their health care, so that as we move forward in the future and build a healthcare clinic for women veterans, we'll be addressing these needs and closing these gaps so that healthcare and the highest quality possible that we can provide for women veterans will be available to them.
And the Vet Center is out on Northeast Sandy and Burnside.
Right. It's right across from the Grotto.
Right across from the Grotto.
So 8383 Sandy,
Right. So folks, can, the women veterans can definitely go out there. And it starts at what time?
It starts at 12 o'clock noon.
Okay.
So it captures the lunch hour.
Yeah.
And usually we're finished by about 1, so it's not a huge investment of time.
Mm-hmm.
But we're gleaning great information from the women veterans that have been participating so far.
Can you talk about that?
Well, we're finding that women veterans have, you know, of course they have issues that are unique because of their gender, and historically the VA has been male-centered. So we're, as we build a comprehensive women's center for women veterans, we're designing it so that they have a private doorway into the center. It's going to be a center, a clinic just for them. It's going to have a combination of services, including a dedicated social worker and a mental health worker, so that they can have all of their health care needs addressed at one visit in one area. The waiting rooms will be dedicated to women veterans. We're going to have areas if they don't feel comfortable being around others. They will have their own private areas where they can wait for their appointments. And we'll have a consistency of care in that we'll have the same receptionists and facilitators that mm-hmm. get to know the women. So it'll become more of a family atmosphere. So the women will get to know the providers well. They will see the same providers on each visit. And we'll be able to meet their needs in a higher quality way.
Mm-hmm. Is all the doctors that are going to be in the clinic is going to be right up on the hill?
Correct.
It's going to be where the what is it called, Bill? Primary care. It's going to be
primary care building.
Right.
Correct.
It's going to be in the primary care building where, uh-huh. and that's going to be. Only for women veterans.
Correct.
Right. And can you talk about, you talked a little bit about some of the services that's going to be given. Could you go down on a list of those for the women? Could you go through some of the exactly, what's they're going to have?
Well, we have a women's health MD, an internal medicine doctor.
Female?
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Who is going to be only seeing female veterans,
okay.
and so she'll be handling all of the primary care needs of the female veterans.
Okay.
So if they have the flu or if they have a sore toe or if they have a headache or whatever, she's going to be seeing them as the main primary care provider
mm-hmm.
for the women veterans.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have the attending gynecologist.
Mm-hmm.
From OHSU that will be here one full day a week.
Wow.
Doing procedures that are, more detailed gynecological procedures
mm-hmm.
That would come under the term specialty care, and that will also be done in this clinic.
Okay.
And so the women won't be going over to the main hospital for one visit and then coming to primary care for another visit, and we handle contraception, we handle hormone therapy, we handle just basic primary care, we fee out all of the maternity needs up to 6 weeks postpartum for women veterans.
Wow.
Yeah, and so we'll be just the whole scope of women's health will be handled in this one comprehensive health clinic, unless an emergency,
right.
of course, and then they'd have to go to the emergency room, and then specialties will still be handled by specialty clinics such as dermatology and that type of thing.
Right.
But
right.
until we have to refer them out for those things, we will be handling all of their health care needs within this comprehensive health clinic.
What about mental health?
It's going to be also, it'll have a presence in the clinic as well. There's a room that's designed for the mental health care presence. So,
mm-hmm.
and we also have group rooms. We have right now a lot of behavioral health programs that are specifically for women that are handled in mental health, and those will be joining us in our clinic, and we'll have just healthy behavior groups for just women.
Mm-hmm.
We have Tai Chi for women,
wow.
and so we'll have a little group room up as part of this clinic where these programs will continue.
Yeah, and one of the things that we were talking about yesterday was one of the things that I don't think the VA pays for, and that is abortions. Is that true?
That's true.
They don't pay for abortions.
Right.
But give out, what do you call it, Bill?
Information.
Birth control?
Yeah, they give birth control, right?
Absolutely.
Okay, birth control. But if a woman does need to have an abortion, they can tell them where to go. Is that what I'm, I'm trying to say?
Absolutely. We provide full support and show them where in the community they can go to if they elect to have that procedure done.
Right. Has it ever been brought up to the VA about putting that as part of their health care program for women veterans? Do you know if that's ever been brought up?
No, I don't think so.
Because I think the military does pay for it, for women to have abortions.
Right. Currently, it's not the policy.
Of the VA.
Right.
Yeah. But we were talking about that a little bit yesterday, about doing that, because some of the women coming back from Iraq, you know, having some problems and stuff. But the one, what are you specifically gleaning from the first two? I think you've had two things out at the vet center, right?
Right.
So what are you getting back from that? What are some of the things that the women veterans are wanting and asking for and needing?
Well, it's come out that they would like a female internal medicine doctor to take care of their needs. They like the model of one-stop shopping. A lot of the veterans now are younger. The OIF veterans are busy. They're students. They're sometimes their moms, wives, working, and they need their health care done in a timely manner. They can't wait a long time between appointments. They don't have the whole day to spend on the hill.
Right.
And so they want to be able to come in and out and have all of their health care needs met within one visit. So that's what we're going to do. The parking is always a problem, but eventually primary care will be off the hill, and we will be the only primary care. The women's clinic will be the only primary care that stays on the hill, so parking should be significantly improved.
Yeah, key word should, right?
It should.
Yeah, because I know that right now they have a clinic in East Portland, and they have one out in Hillsboro. And I think the next one's going to be in either Oregon City, I think.
West Lynn,
yeah, it's going to be at West Lynn. So that will take a lot of the pressure off of the hill.
Oh, we also have one in the Dalles.
Oh, really? The Dalles?
Right.
Wow. Did you know that, Bill?
No, I didn't.
I didn't either. I didn't know that. One in the Dalles. That's great. That's great.
And there's one in Lincoln County coming.
That's another one. Wow, that's great. That'll take a lot of pressure off the hill.
Exactly. We're trying to make these clinics really easily accessible to all veterans, including women. If they want to choose to go to those clinics instead of coming to the Hill, they can do that.
That's no problem.
Absolutely.
Yeah. How many women veterans are in the system up there? Do you have any idea?
Right now, there are 4,800 enrollees.
4,800.
Wow.
Wow, that's a lot.
I had no idea there were that many.
I didn't either. 4,800.
It's projected to double in the next 5 years.
Wow. So most of them the younger women, or do you have any idea of the breakdown?
Yes, I do. 3,000 of those women are over the age of 40, and 1,400 are under the age of 40.
Does it break down in African American or Native American? Do you break it down in that? Do you do that?
We do that. I don't have that data now. I'm doing that as part of my research. I'll have that data at the end of May.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, gosh, no kidding, 4,800. That surprises me. That's really a wonder you guys need your own clinic.
Do you find that women are more willing to come to your clinic? I mean, they're more willing to take the availability of the service to them, rather than having to go up on the hill with us old geezers.
Well, they definitely, I mean, not all of them need to have a private area that's just for women, but the fact that it's being provided for them and that we have that as a goal, they see as a huge benefit towards achieving overall improvement and quality of their health care.
Yeah, I can see that.
Do these women talk to one another and encourage one another to avail themselves of these services?
Yes, and at the last focus group I had last Tuesday, that was definitely what they were saying, is that they were going to start calling their friends and telling them about this and providing some outreach. I'm also trying to do that myself. I spoke at the Combat Veterans Mental Health Summit last week, or 2 weeks ago. And again, with all of this is part of the outreach to get the word out that we have these services for women now, and that we want them to be able to feel comfortable in coming and using them, because we have very good staff, a quality service now, and a nice area where the women can be seen.
Sorry, Nancy.
Sure.
Yesterday, that was kind of brought up too. Carol Randall said that she hadn't heard about it until that morning, and a woman in her building told her about it. And Carol goes up there all the time for the healthcare.
Yeah.
But Carol Randall brought up that since there's a list of the women veterans, that it would be pretty easy to have a mailing. The VA could do a mailing about this to get it out and to
based on gender.
Based on gender, yeah.
Exactly. I have that list, and that is one of my future outreach goals.
Yeah, I think that would be great to get, have that. Plus, with all these women coming back, I mean, there's been more, there's what, I don't know what the percentage of female troops in Iraq or around the world, but it's got to be big.
Yeah, I don't know either, Marvin.
It's about 15% now.
50% of the military is female?
Correct.
Wow. So these women are going to be coming back here pretty soon and definitely going to be needing health care.
Exactly.
And I think one of the things that these women are going to need, just like we needed when we came back from Vietnam, is mental health. I think that's one of the big things. I think women would probably be more open going to mental health than men. So
it's possible.
That's
a valid point.
Yeah.
And they definitely get right into the system, OEF, OIF system, and uh-huh. are plugged right into mental health if those are their needs and taken care of really instantaneously on arrival back.
Yeah, so, that's good.
Right.
That's good. Is there anything else that you want to bring up? About the new healthcare for our sisters and contact information for sure.
Definitely. We want them to feel free to just contact us directly at my extension. We have two direct extensions here. Okay. One of them is 55595.
55595.
55595.
55595, okay.
And one is 54838.
54838, and that's 220-8262?
Correct.
Okay, so they call 503-220-8262. They can call either extension 55595 or extension 54838.
Correct.
Is those right, Nancy?
Right.
Also, there's. I want to talk to you a little bit about when I went up on the hill a couple days before that. I stopped by the Minority Veterans Office.
Uh huh.
Can you talk about that a little bit? Do you have much contact with those folks?
I do. We actually have a Women's Health Advisory Committee, and Maria Mondragon sits on that.
Right. Talk about that.
She is a strong advocate for making sure that women, and along with others, relatively smaller numbers of veterans, and as minorities are getting equal services here within the VA. So she's active in doing that, and women up to this point have fallen into that category. So she was very involved in the function yesterday, the tea for Women's History Month, and other functions like that, she takes a lead in.
Yeah, she's a very, very nice woman. I talked to her for a while a couple of days ago, and then yesterday I also talked with her, and she's really doing a great job. It's really going to be helpful to women veterans and minority veterans.
Right. I also wanted to mention that there's some legislation that's pending that bills are addressing women veterans' health care specifically.
Okay. Go ahead.
And they are designed to expand and improve health care services for women veterans, particularly those that have served in Iraq and Afghanistan, and equip the VA for long-term needs that are associated to this growing population.
And is that a state or a federal? bill?
It's a federal bill.
Do you have the number?
I do not. I'm sorry.
That's all right.
I don't know how you can get that.
Okay.
But we can check on that for you and let you know. But there's a lot of legislation now that's even looking at addressing child care needs of women veterans when they come to seek health care services at the VA.
That was brought up yesterday also.
Exactly.
Yeah, that was brought up. And they were talking about, I can't think of her names. The woman's name, I'm sorry. But she was talking about they may have child care right there in the new clinic.
Exactly. We have an area designed for that where older children can watch a movie or read some books while their moms are being cared for.
Right. That's a great idea.
Yeah.
That is a great, great, great idea. I think, you know, that'll really come in handy for our sisters that are going up there. So could you give the time and the address for tomorrow?
It's on the it's not tomorrow. It's on the 31st.
Oh, 31st. I'm sorry.
Of March.
Mm.
It's from 12 o'clock to 1 o'clock.
12 to 1.
It's 8383 Northeast Sandy Boulevard at the Vet Center, and that's right across from the Grotto.
Okay, right across from the Grotto.
And the meeting is held. It's in the lowest, you know, sort of where the basement is of that building.
Right.
Down the hall. At the end of the hall on the left, and that's where we'll be. It's a large conference room where we have this focus group.
Okay. And so if anybody needs to call you or whatever, they can call 503-220-8262, extension 55595, or extension 54838.
Correct.
Did I get those right?
Perfect.
Okay. I want to really thank you for spending this time with us and the job that you folks are doing up there, especially for our sister veterans. And it sounds like it's really going to work out good for the health care that these women need that they hadn't, you know, known about or participated in before. Is there anything more you'd like to say before we have to go?
We want to just encourage women to enroll in the program, enroll here at the VA so that they can use the services. We want to see them and make sure that they will anticipate increased services and that they come.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Yeah.
Do you make an effort to contact them as they're discharged or?
Oh, yeah, I was going to ask.
We have participated in welcome home events to make sure that they know that there are women's health services.
Uh-huh.
And I hear that it's been rumored that women, OIF women, are going to be automatically enrolled. So just so that they make sure that they are aware that these are health care services that are also for them.
Wow.
And it's not just for male veterans. So
that's very important.
That's great.
It should help with the whole process of the dissemination of information.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, Nancy, I had a question on going to the mental health part of things.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh.
And I really don't know whether the things are the same today with the women, so I'm going to have to refer back to being a Vietnam vet. And I think that there's a high percentage of us that came back that had no idea that we needed mental health counseling.
Uh-huh.
And until it was to a point to where it was almost, you know, really out of control and it should have been addressed a lot earlier. So the question is, have you thought about or do you have some kind of a process so that when the people come, when the ladies come, that in the course of some kind of an interview or something that you can begin to address that ahead of time? Part of the thing that I personally feel is that it's almost in the area of when you go in, one of the first things that the doctor always does is he takes your blood pressure. You walked in, you got there just fine. And he listened to your heart. You know, those are standard things. And from my perspective, it makes sense to me that you automatically assume you need to check their mental health status and assume that there was probably some need to address that in a healthy way. Could you respond to that, please, Nancy?
Sure. When someone enrolls and they have their first primary care visit, they're being asked regularly asked screening questions to tease out possible problems. And that, their mental health questions, such as whether they've had trauma, whether they're feeling depressed, any of those issues are screened out in their initial primary care visit. And, of course, we're very alert, even when I'm doing women's health visits with them, to really fine-tune and hone in on any kind of possible problems that they're displaying in the course of the visit. Mm-hmm. We're very aware of the situation, and we want to make sure that we don't miss it. And most of the providers here are very keen and interested in teasing out any possible problems like that, and will start a series of questions leading that way if they see or suspect that there might be some mental health issues involved.
Wow.
Some of us are pretty good at concealing that.
Yeah.
That's true, but these are very, very adept and very skilled providers.
So you're right, yes.
That know the veteran population. So
yes.
Even if someone's being overly quiet and doesn't want to talk, that could be a key to a provider that they might need to do some more questions.
Yeah. You know, the VA, the doctors and the nurses up there and the technicians, man, they're the finest I've ever been to. I wish the rest of the country could have as good health care as we get up
there.
Yeah,
the rest of the citizens have...
They deserve it. The rest of the deserve it, you know.
Little follow-up on the mental health, Nancy. One of the things that we do in medicine also today that I think is excellent is that we do a lot of preventive medicine and work, and I know even my doctor talks about, you know, things to prevent rather than wait and solve it afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
Is there the possibility that maybe through the VA's work that the military could move more in the direction of doing some preventive things on the mental health?
Well, I know that's being discussed. I had someone at one of my breakout sessions at the mental health conference that was representing the DOD, and they said that they're very active in working on the mental health conditions and precipitants to mental health problems that are that occur while the soldiers are in active duty. So that's not my department because we're in the Veterans Affairs.
Right.
But I was this expert that was at the session said that that was being well studied at this point.
Great.
So the preventive measures are going to start being taken, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to mention this book, Best Care Anywhere, by Philip Longman, and the subtitle on it is Why VA Healthcare is Better Than Yours.
Yeah, I've got that book.
Do you? It's a very good book, and actually has a very interesting history to how the VA has now become the quality healthcare service that it has become in our country.
Good book.
We're talking with Nancy Sloan, and what is your position at the there?
I'm the Women Veterans Program Manager.
Veterans.
I'm to advocate for women veterans issues, healthcare issues here at the Portland VA.
And I encourage all of the listeners to get a hold of her if you need to. We're just thrilled, Nancy, that you were able to be on Veterans Voice here on KBOO Portland. We're 90.7 on the dial, and Veterans Voice has moved to Friday, so tell all your friends that, to listen in. And Nancy, let the women know, too, that we anything that we can do to help.
You bet. You've got my cell phone number I've given you. So
absolutely.
If you need to get a hold of me for anything like that, you know, just give me a call, and we'll definitely get it on for you.
And great, thank you.
Yeah, we want to thank you for coming on, and definitely want to thank you for all the good work you folks are doing up there, and especially for all this great stuff you're doing for our sisters up there.
You're
you know.
Welcome. It was a pleasure speaking with you.
Okay, it was nice. I wish I could have met you yesterday, but
next time.
Okay. Okay, thanks, Nancy.
Thank you. Uh-huh,
okay, bye. We were talking to Nancy Sloan from the VA. She's a women's advocate. She's also a nurse practitioner, and she does hands-on work, you know, medical work with the women veterans up there. And one of the things that I got yesterday, I had a whole bunch, but I didn't bring them. I got this one thing that Women Change America, writing women back into history, a gazette from the National Women's History Project. And it is amazing. It's a great, great magazine. And the front page on it's got these great pictures of all the women who have done such great work. And Why Women's History Matters, Women Who Changed America, is celebrating 25 years, 205 partners and events. And it's a nonprofit organization. And I'm going to give you their address here. It is National Women's History Project, NWHP 3343 Industrial Drive, Santa Rosa, California 95403. And as I was sitting up there, I was the only man there.
You should have been, you were right in your element then, weren't you?
Yes, I was. I was helping. And they have all these great articles in this magazine about the women, you know, geez, it's like Rachel Carson, Shirley Chisholm, Alice Coachman, Emily Dickinson, Ada Deer, Dorothy Day, Anita Hill, Helen Keller,
Fannie Mae,
Coretta Scott King. It just goes for Kitty O'Neill, Georgia O'Keeffe, Patsy Mink, just goes on and on, and it just talks about all this wonderful stuff that's been done by women in this country. Wilma Rudolph.
Oh, yeah.
And Women's National History Project, reclaiming women's rightful place in history. So if folks, that would be really a good project to support. And like I I'm going to give you that address one more time if you want to get a hold of them. It's NYSHDA Women's History Project, 3343 Industrial Drive, Santa Rosa, California, 95403. And they gave out a thing yesterday. I wish I would have brought it. It's a program that nationwide, it's called the Red Dress Program, and it's about women's healthcare dealing with the heart, women's hearts. And it's a little pin, it's a red dress. And they were giving those out yesterday. And I have it out in my truck, but I didn't bring it with me. But it's a great...
Didn't you say your nephew Travis went to one of those events here?
No, that's
in
something
Portland?
Else. That's for AIDS.
Oh.
That's a different kind of
I
a program.
Okay, but they were dressed in red, weren't
they? Red dress, right. Uh-huh. They were dressed in red. That's for the AIDS,
for AIDS.
In Portland. Yeah.
Okay.
Everybody that goes there has to wear a red dress.
Yeah.
Men, women, it doesn't matter. Y'all wear red dresses. So, yeah, Travis went, and I think my brother Dickie, he's gone to it. And,
yeah.
And he's a pretty big boy.
Yeah.
Has to be a big red dress.
And I get Omar the tent maker.
Oh, yeah, he's big. Well, 300 pounds maybe now. You think he weighs 300 pounds now?
I don't think so. No, maybe.
Whoa.
250, 280.
I got the paper today, and there's a lot of stuff I got off the internet, too. And today, can Iraq function once U.S. leaves? And, of course, I always get it to find out U.S. deaths. And so far in Iraq, what's today? The start of the seventh year.
Yeah.
That the U.S. has occupied Iraq. So 4,259 U.S. military personnel have died in Iraq. So far, 591 military personnel have died in Afghanistan. That's going to go up.
Yes, indeed.
And a million or more Iraqis.
Or more Iraqis have died. Plus, you know, they've
been displaced, scattered all over that part of the country.
Yeah, it's a key figure since the Iraqi war began. It's on page A6, so the deaths are on A6. But it's got a pretty good list of things that are going on, you know, happening in Iraq. Coalition troop level, private contractors. Guess how many private contractors in 2008, Bill? Oh, I'm not supposed to ask a question you don't know the answer to.
I know the answer.
190,000.
170,
190? Yeah, 190,000.
Last I heard was 170,000.
Well, we bumped that up a little. So, and then Iraqi security forces, the 171,000. So, you know, but, you know, they're going into Afghanistan now. And one thing I wanted to actually talk to Nancy a little bit about, I wish we could have got, military rape reports rise, prosecution still low. And they're saying that the Pentagon office that collects the data estimates that only 10% to 20% of sexual assaults among members of the active duty military are reported. And it's a really, I got this off of, where'd I get it? I don't know. But it talks about the number. The Pentagon said it received 2,923 reports of sexual assaults across the military in the last 12 months. 2,923 sexual assaults.
And that's what, 10% or 20% of of what actually took place?
Yeah, that are reported, right. So that's only 10 to 20% of what actually happened.
Yeah.
And I don't think they broke it down. Okay, Director of the Pentagon Sexual Assault Prevention and Response Office said most victims are women. Most cases involve young people, and alcohol is often involved.
Yeah.
But I thought they were supposed to have alcohol in Iraq.
You know, that's more than one every other day.
Yeah, that's just...
When you break it down per day, I didn't do the... I'm not a quick pencil on math, but that's basically one every other day.
Yeah.
Plus.
Okay, while the reports show modest improvements, we are far from mission accomplished. That's good old George Bush saying, you know. This is from the office of Jane Harman, a California Democrat. Military women are more likely to be raped by a fellow soldier than killed by the enemy fire in Iraq. Oh, man, that is just horrible. Okay, what else they got here?
Well, and from what I've read, Marvin, the women that do complain get short shrift and wind up with reduction in rank and all kinds of... subtle punishments attend.
It's still a good old boy club.
Yeah, you
it's
bet
still
it
a
is.
Good old boy club.
You're darn right.
You know, like in Vietnam, there weren't very many women at all. The only women I really saw when I was in during the war was nurses.
Yeah.
And then there's some young women who worked for the Red Cross, but you didn't see them very often. But even those nurses that were always having to protect themselves against you know, their own guys.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
The difference between Iraq and Vietnam is that the men sexually abused the Vietnamese women.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, wherever we go.
Yeah. It's the Vietnamese. Also, another commander say stress is a factor in suicides in the military.
Yeah. And that's on the rise too. The number of suicides.
Yeah, a top army commander said Wednesday the strain of long and repeated deployments was a big factor in the spike of suicides among army personnel. It's a stressed and tired force.
Yeah.
Where to go?
Well, that's one of the things they used to talk about coming out of World War II, that they tried to change in Korea, and then definitely. Attempted to almost eliminate in Vietnam was the time factor.
time factor. Right, that was
so
one of the
that's
things.
Why your basic tour in Nam was 1 year.
And
that was the primary reason for it.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't because they didn't want you over there anymore. They would have kept you longer.
Yeah, you bet.
But they knew you had problems. And what's fascinating again is not listening and remembering history. And so here they went back to a program that they knew didn't work, that
right.
they knew would cause problems, that they knew would have long-term ramifications,
mm-hmm.
not only for the individual soldier, but for all the people and family around him, and yet they ignored that and went back to something that didn't work.
Yeah, they said last year the Army had 140 suspected suicides among active duty troops, an all-time high. It reported 24 suspected suicides in January, followed by 18 suspected suicides last month. Each military branch service says an increase in the number of suicides among its ranks from 2000 to 2008.
Can I read a short poem?
Sure you can, Bill.
Yeah, this is entitled...
Tammy, is it okay if Bill writes a poem?
I'm snuggling. This poem is entitled, We Are Those People. I have abhorred the wars and despised the liars, laughed at the frightened, and forecast victory, never one moment's doubt. But not far over the backs of some crawling years, the next great war's column of dust and fire writhes.
Wow.
Up the sides of the sky, it becomes clear that we too may suffer what others have, the brutal horror of defeat, or if not in the next, then in the next. Therefore, watch Germany. This was written at before World War II.
Wow.
And read the future. We wish, of course, that our women would die like biting rats in the cellars, our men like wolves in the mountains. It will not be so. Our men will curse, cringe, obey. Our women uncover themselves to the grinning victors for bits of chocolate.
Oh, wow. Who wrote that?
It's,
Wow.
I have his name here.
Well, Bill looks for the name. That was our own Bill here on Veterans Voice on KBO.
Robinson Jeffers.
Where did you find that? And where could one of the listeners get a copy of that?
In a discussion group, I was on a rant, and one of the members of the discussion group...
Bill was on a rant.
copied these for me and brought them in because they're in pretty much in the way I think, the way many of us think.
They're also this General Peter somebody or other, I can't pronounce it. He said about 2/3 of those who had committed suicide last year were either deployed or had deployed. A vast majority said were dealing with some type of relationship problems, and many had legal, financial, or occupational difficulties.
Yeah, I heard something just briefly the other day about they're dealing with this stop loss or going to deal with the stop loss issue,
happen to have something.
Oh, good.
stop loss will all but end by 2011. Gates says. Gates is the Secretary of Defense, right, Bill?
Secretary of War, yes.
Secretary of War. Secretary of War Robert M. Gates said Wednesday that over 2 years he would all but eliminate an unpopular practice that has prevented tens of thousands of active duty soldiers and reservists from leaving military service on time if they were scheduled to deploy to Iraq or Afghanistan. So all they have to do is say these guys are getting ready to get out of the service, and all of a sudden it comes down that the Oregon National Guard is on the list to be deployed,
yes.
And they have to stay in.
That's what they
have to stay in for the 2 years that before the deployment because they've been told, and so then they have to stay in for the deployment period itself.
Yeah, yeah.
So these guys could spend up to, well, 3.5 years past their enlistment.
Yeah. Sounds like he's allowed himself an awful lot of wiggle room there.
Lots of wiggle room.
Yeah.
And so, you know, these men and these women, they're staying past their time, but they're getting paid the same amount of pay. You know.
Well, when I was in Korea, a tour of duty was 18 months. And you when your time was up, you came home. That's all there was to it.
Yeah, Vietnam, same.
Uh-huh.
Same thing. More than 13,000 soldiers remain unable to exit the military under the policy known as Stop Loss, which was put in effect after the attacks of September 11, then expanded in 2004 as the Army struggled to sustain two large war efforts.
Yeah, yeah.
See, he's talking, you know, he's like John just said, this wiggle room.
Yeah.
You know, they're taking these troops out of Iraq and put them in Afghanistan,
right?
But they're still leaving what 50,000 troops in Iraq after they so-called pull out.
Well, that
50,000 troops.
That's
what's wrong with that picture?
Nothing's wrong with it as long as you're in control of the situation in Iraq.
Yeah. Wow. The policy has been intensely unpopular with troops and their family, some who have denounced it as a backdoor draft. Some 120,000 soldiers have been affected by Stop Loss in its various forms since 2001. Army officials said Wednesday a practice that Secretary of War Gates said had amounted to breaking faith with those in uniform.
Well, that's not unusual at all.
Mm-hmm.
I remember there was a trial here, and the government says that they weren't violating their contract with the GIs because they had the right to do that, and you were obligated as a GI to the government. The government is not obligated to you.
Boy, I wished I would have brought that so-called enlistment form and read it, but it nowhere on that form, Bill, does it say contract.
No.
Nowhere. It doesn't say contract at all.
When I heard the excuses that the government lawyers were making in this trial, it was just...
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Oh, yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, they just...
This is a nation of laws?
Well, yeah. Yeah, that's what you said.
If the law suits you.
Yeah. Something that's near and dear to my heart, and breaking news, cluster bomb exports permanently banned. I got this from my friends at United States Campaign to Ban Landmines. Breaking news, President Obama will sign the law today that will make permanent a ban on nearly all cluster bomb exports from the United States. Nearly all.
Nearly all.
Congress included the export ban in an omnibus budget bill that passed the Senate last night. This provision will move the U.S. one step closer to the position of nearly 100 nations, including our closest NATO allies, that signed a treaty banning cluster munitions in December. The legislation states that cluster munitions can only be exported if they leave behind less than 1% of their submunitions as duds, and if the receiving country agrees that cluster munitions will not be used where civilians are known to be present. Only a very tiny fraction of cluster munitions in U.S. arsenal meet the 1% standard. This export ban was first enacted in a similar budget bill in December 2007, but the law mandated it only for 1 year. The dud rate on these cluster munition is 40%.
Yeah.
40%. Yeah. Well, you know, we've talked about cluster bombs before. What cluster bombs is a big bomb with little bombettes inside of it. So they drop this bomb, and the big bomb opens up, and it just throws all these little bombs out. And inside these little bombs are usually thousands and thousands of flechettes, little sharpened things, you know. Yeah. And 40% dud rate, you know, that is just I just get so angry.
Yeah, while we're not satisfied with this, let me point out one good point of this that should encourage us. Is it's worth keeping up the cry against things like this.
Oh, yeah.
You've heard us month after month.
Year after year.
Yeah, it's gone. Well, we're hitting decades here pretty soon.
Yeah.
But that's some payoff. It's not where we want to be. It's not the ultimate goal, but it shows the importance for all of us, and that's why we really appreciate our listeners that as we pass out the information, that they act on it and that they call the congressmen, the senators, and so forth, and keep the pressure up.
And they're aware of
it. They're aware
of it, and you keep the pressure up. So be encouraged. Our voice is certainly not being heard like we'd like it to be, but there are some people that are starting to pay attention.
Yeah,
so let's
and
keep
one
it
of
up.
Those one of those people is Michelle Obama.
Yeah,
she's pretty sharp. She's dealing with this stuff. And on the back of this report that my friend sent me, a live U.S.-made M77 cluster submunition in a citrus orchard in southern Lebanon, one of an estimated 4 million dropped in 2006.
How many?
Cluster munitions were dropped in southern Lebanon.
I didn't want to figure out how many a day that
2006.
Is.
2006.
Well, that was in the war with the Israelis and Hezbollah.
Wasn't it Hezbollah?
Yeah.
Yeah, got into a fight. But 4 million?
Well, that
by however many little cluster munitions are inside those bombs. You know, that's, you know, the cluster munitions, these little bombettes, are the worst thing for the bomb experts or, you know, to try to disarm.
Yeah, yeah.
They're so deadly. And they're so unstable. And, you know, some of them are shaped like toys. You know, we've talked about that before.
And colored brightly.
And they're colored, and they look like little toys, and these children pick them up. They're still finding these things in Vietnam, Laos, and Cambodia. You know?
Yeah.
After all these years,
yes,
you know, they're here, and so this.
And as they get older, they get more unstable.
Unstable, right?
Yeah.
Here's a letter, for what it's worth, a letter to President Obama. Oh, 3 minutes. Okay, this was sent by a retired colonel in the Air Force, saying how don't get involved in Iraq, in Afghanistan. He's saying the Russians tried it, didn't work.
The English tried it.
Yeah, he said, this guy is a retired guy here, a colonel or whatever. I don't make that any better than us. And but he said, you know, don't get involved in Afghanistan because it's just a sinkhole, a stinkhole that'll drag us down. So, John, you want to end this thing for us today?
Ultimate quagmire. Well, we just appreciate that everyone was here. We appreciate Bill being here and Marvin and all the good work. If we had a big applause track, we would play that right now. But we're applauding you for listening to Veterans Voice, brought to you by Northwest Veterans for Peace on KBOO Portland. This is the station to listen to.
Yeah.
And as usual, we have our top-of-the-line number one engineer, Tammy, our thanks to you.
Oh, she's
and
wonderful.
If you have some music ready, you can take us out, and we'll see you again next month.
Next month. Remember, Friday, the third Friday.
If the good Lord's willing and the creek don't rise.
There it is.
With the next breath. blind man can't see, he believes blind. Blind obedience is the child of mindless mind. New world order is an old world blind.
It is 10 o'clock and you are listening to KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland. Up next, it's Air Cascadia with Chris Andre and Liam Delta. At 10:15 on Flashpoint, hear a speak out of youth against the war, and Palestinian legislator Mustafa Barghouti speaks about the appointment of Avigdor Lieberman as Israel's foreign minister. At 11, it's Boneheads and Bigots with Pat McGuire, and at 11:30, hear reviews of the latest movies on Movie Talk. Stay tuned to KBOO.
Hi, this is Pat McGuire. I'm the host of Boneheads and Bigots. Join us on KBOO at our new time. We're on the third Friday of every month at 11 o'clock a.m. And you know Boneheads and Bigots. We talk about politics. We talk about anti-democratic elements in politics. We talk about public affairs. We talk about books. And we always talk about music. So join us at our new time. That means in March, we're going to be on Friday, March 20th at 11 o'clock a.m.